Welcome to the Church Podcast, talking all things ministry to help you do church better. I'm your co-host, John Rinaldo, sitting here alongside Mr. Chris Wesley. Chris, how are you in this fine, fine day?
I am doing fantastic, John. I mean, it is great. It is hard to believe that we are almost in those true summer months of June and July and August. The dog days of summer are almost here, which doesn't sound like something to be excited for, right? Dog days of summer, but I'm excited for summertime. That it's going to be good because the spring in Maryland was miserable, just with cold, hot, cold, hot, cold, hot, cold, hot. It was a tough transition for us into the summertime. So, but I'm doing well. I'm feeling blessed. How are you doing?
Yeah, good. No, I'm excited. You know, summer, my family and I are taking a little extended trip this summer, and we're just kind of gearing up for that. And just looking forward to a little bit of rest and relaxation this summer before we kind of kick it back into high gear come the fall, come in August. So this is definitely a good time of year. But one of the places that is a reality this time of year is June 30th and July 1st, magic dates on any church calendar, especially when you're dealing with the transition of a pastor or a priest. The reality is that our priests, you know, flow from parish to parish. Some are with us for longer times. Some are here with us for shorter times. But the reality is that whenever there's a transition, it brings a little bit of drama and trauma, I would say, to the parish, to the staff, and to parishioners. That's going to be our topic today, is talking about what happens when we have a transition of pastor, and from the perspective of staff, but also from the perspective of the people in the pews as well. So that's what we're going to talk about today. Chris, that sound good?
Oh man, I don't know. Emotionally, I might be a wreck at this. This is it brings up sad memories and times where I did not understand as a kid why that priest left. It's definitely, I think, a topic that creates a lot of tension. I think tension's the right word for it, because some people might be unfortunately happy to see a priest transition out. But I think the majority of people are really sad or disheartened by it. I'm going to ignore John's doubtful look on that statement. I really do. I really do because I think there's comfort in stability, right? Yeah, and even if it's not the best thing for you, there's comfort in that. Whenever I hear about priest transitions, I think back to my teenage years. When we had an awesome priest, his name was Father Richard, and it was kind of a crazy event. So our pastor, at the time, like, everything was going really well at our parish, right? And our pastor was a dynamic leader and everything, and he goes away on vacation, and he has a heart attack and dies. And so it's like one of those things where our community is mourning, right? Mm-hmm. And so we're just like, what do we do? Like, how's this going to be resolved? And so everyone was like, well, thank God we have Father Richard, the associate, right? And he was a young guy. He was like, I think he was only 25 at the time, right? He was a little bit older than that. But like, still, he was a young guy. And we're like, all right, he'll take over, it's next person up and everything like that. And the diocese brings in a new priest, a new pastor. And, right away it was kind of like, who's this guy? Like, he's going to be our pastor. Why isn't Father Richard our pastor? Like, what's going on? They transitioned this new priest to be the pastor. And then they transitioned out Father Richard to be a pastor of another church.
Oh man!
And it was like one of those things where I remember as a kid just being like, what is going on? Like, and it was all these new relationships, and our new pastor was great man, good guy and everything. Unfortunately, he passed away a couple of years ago, but I think he was just given kind of a raw deal because one, he had to take over from this really dynamic pastor. And so he was always going to be compared to that. And our associate left and they brought in a new associate. And it was just kind of like one of those things where I think the handoff was just not handled as well as it could have been. And unfortunately, the parish really suffered for a couple of years after that, because I think there were just some people who, with the tragic loss of our pastor, with the miscommunication of who should take over and everything, it really left a lot of hurt. And that's something that has kept, like, you know, a huge, you know, made a huge impression on me, to the point where I remember when I was interviewing with Church of the Nativity, there was a huge fear that that Father White was going to leave after 5 years or 3 years or whatever the transition is. Now, Archdiocese of Baltimore functions a little bit different than other dioceses. He's been there now, I think close to 20 years, if not more. So it's safe to say that he's been there for a while. Where I am now, my pastor, Monsignor Hilgartner, has been there for about 3 years. He's going into his fourth year, but his predecessor, Monsignor Cook, was there for like 30 plus years. So it's such a different, it's funny being in this different diocese than where I grew up, and just seeing that longevity is kind of like one of those things. But as we kind of mentioned before, there's a plus side and a minus side to that as well. So I know I just kind of like just unveiled, you know, all this like history, but like, yeah, what's your experience with the priest transitioning?
Yeah, you know, it's challenging. And of course, I being a normal, selfish human being, I immediately think about, you know, what's my response or how this affects me. And I've certainly been part of transitions that have absolutely affected me, you know, but the other side that I want to make sure that we name, and neither you or I are priests, but how challenging this can be for our priests as well, right? In terms of, I mean, you just mentioned about this comparison game, right? Comparing the old pastor to the new pastor. And that's hard. Like, that's hard for any of us. I don't care who you are. You know, it's like, our priests are amazing, but yet the reality is that when they go into a new parish, and, you know, they automatically can compare to the person who just left, right? Which is a bummer and hard. It's reality, you know, but especially if you mentioned like your experience, like they were very beloved. Well, then you kind of, I mean, it's not that you're set up for failure per se, but you have a hard, challenging road ahead, you know, in terms of that transition. And I really feel for priests, because I can't imagine, I mean, that vow of obedience, you know, you gotta mm-hmm. go where the bishop sends you, and right. It's good. I mean, that's the normal part of ordination, you know, but it comes with some psychological concerns as well. You know, the parish I'm currently a part of here in the Bay Area, both priests are transitioning this summer, completely out, and so we're getting two new priests, which is actually going to be a huge change. And but your story resonates. There's another parish in the Bay Area that I visited recently, that their beloved pastor, just like you shared, died 3 years ago now.
Wow.
But beloved, like, right. It's a big deal, like, to the point that the diocese has not assigned a new pastor to it yet. There's an administrator, you know, who's overseeing it, you know, but he's not the pastor. And I think the parish it's probably still in mourning, you know, and the diocese has waited. I think there may be some other reasons for that too. I don't know if it's a parish that's potentially on the closure list or whatnot, because that is happening on the West Coast as well, on occasion. But it is that again, psychologically, you know, it's like when you have someone you love so dearly and then you leave, the parish is different. So let's talk through this transition. This transition can be traumatic, dramatic. There's tension, you know.
Yeah.
You know, let's kind of delve into this a little bit more.
So, like, where should we start? Should we start on the back end of the transition, or the preparing for the transition? Because, you know, it's interesting. I can think of times where it's been done well. Mm-hmm. And then, as I mentioned, times where it hasn't been done well. Now, granted, no one prepares for someone to die of a heart attack, you know. Yeah. But, like, there are definitely priests, now that I've been doing Marathon Youth Ministry for over a year, priests that I've worked with who have transitioned into parishes, who are newly new pastors, and then there are people who I've seen who are on their way out. And I guess, yeah, where do we start? Do we start with the pre? Or, let's start with the pre. All right. John's shaking his head like you guys can see him. So I'm doing all the translation of John's poor podcast communication.
I just want you to flow right into it, brother. Just go.
All right. So, you know, and this is someone I hope to have on the podcast one day, Father Simon Lobo, who's the pastor of St. Benedict's Parish in Halifax. Some of you guys might know it because it's the Divine Renovation Parish where Father James Mallon was the pastor. He's no longer the pastor. He's actually the associate pastor. And so I had the privilege of having a bite to eat with Father Simon. And he was sharing with me a little bit of the transition. And, you know, what was interesting is Father Simon came in as the associate to apprentice under Father James. Would one day go and have his own parish, right? But through a bunch of just different things that happened, they decided that it would be better if they would switch roles, if Father Mallon would become the associate and Father Simon would become the pastor. And then Father Mallon eventually could move on to another parish. And I thought about that and I was like, that's a great apprenticeship model. You know, where basically, you know, as the leader, you are investing in your replacement. And then over time, you're giving your apprentice a little bit more responsibility to the point where maybe eventually then you are working for them. And, you know, they're still in the process of it. And some things have gone smooth, some things haven't. But there's not that same mourning because the pastor's there. Now, the challenge is, people could go over Father Simon's head to talk to Father Mallon, but for the most part, it's happening pretty smoothly. So that's an example of where I think the preparedness is going well. But I think even to take a step back, I think there's something that's important, and that's really talking about like making sure that you are building a church that's not just built on a personality, and that you're pointing out different leaders, and that you as the leader, maybe you're the pastor or the pastoral associate, or maybe you're an associate pastor, but making sure that people are not just putting all their eggs of hope and church into one person, because it doesn't have to be the pastor. The youth minister could leave, the DRE could leave, you know, and that could have a huge impact on the community. So I think it's really building up a whole that it's we, the church, and not just Father's church.
Yeah. And I agree with that 100%, but we are in a culture where the especially the priest, the pastor has a tremendous amount of influence on what happens and what the culture of the parish looks like, what the leadership looks like, what the staff structure looks like. And so we are in a system that really encourages exactly what you are trying to discourage, that it's built on one individual. And it's starting to change. I certainly recognize that, but one of the pastors I know who says it often, maybe too often, is like, he often says, I will leave at some point. So this is your parish, not my parish, you know? And I appreciate the sentiment of that, you know, cause there is truth to that. But the reality is you still have influence too as a pastor, you know, to kind of drive some of that. So when taken to an extreme, you acquiesce responsibility,
right? And it is finding that tension there. And I think you're definitely right. One of the things though, what I was trying to emphasize is this sense that when the pastor leaves, I think what people are most concerned about is what change is going to take place.
Right.
I think there's going to be a mourning of the personality and the person that they're going to miss. And that you can't control. You just can't control that. Mm-hmm. But what you can control is, okay, how much of our programming and our ministry is going to change? And even though any pastor could walk in and, you know, flip the switch and change the church completely, I mean, it would be horrible for them to dismantle everything if it's good. If you have a really strong structure in place, he's not going to have to worry about making any significant changes, at least right away. And any changes he does make are going to be gradual and over time, just as if the current pastor was still there. Mm-hmm. So I think, if you're concerned about your pastor leaving, or if you're a leader and you're concerned that when you leave, everything around you will crumble and fall, that's where you have to start building up those ranks of different leaders in your lay staff, in your volunteers, in your parish council, so that the next priest in is set up for success. Mm-hmm,
mm-hmm. Yeah. And I think as a lay leader, it's okay to mourn, right? You know,
right.
And I think that's normal, you know, it's so during the transition before the priest or the pastor leaves, like do that mourning, like that's the time to kind of mourn and say, you know, I'm going to miss this person. This person is loved, right? You know, but do that mourning early so that when the new priest, a new pastor comes on board, you are in a space emotionally right. and psychologically ready to come in and support, give the new priest, the new pastor, what they need to succeed. Yeah. And I think that's the important piece. I think, you know, we have to stop mourning come July 1 when the new assignment comes, because it, unfortunately at that point, it doesn't help anymore. Like
right.
you've now got to be on board with this, because it's not like you're going to change the assignment, you know, if you don't like it or whatnot. And come to terms with the fact that, look, change is going to happen, whether it happens right away or a year from now. Every new leader brings its own personality, its own ways of thinking. It's not good or bad. It just is. And maybe it'd be really good, right? Make us
right.
think differently about the way that we do things. And so I think we often, I know I do, I immediately start to go to the challenges. Okay, so I'm mourning. Now I'm going to start to go to the challenges of like, oh, it's going to be different. We start getting down and we start getting
right.
When the reality is, like, this is an opportunity as well, right? And we have to think about that way. It's like, you know, what is this new pastor going to bring to the table that we don't currently have, it and get excited and energized about that, you know? But two, again, it's an opportunity to also, as you were saying, Chris, let's start solidifying, or we should be doing this even before transition happens, but let's solidify our leadership structures, our empowering of volunteers, how we want our ministry to be, you know, so that it is solid and
right.
and kind of is ready to take the test of this new phase of life that you guys are going to be in as a parish.
Well, and I think that's key. I think that's key because you want to set up the next pastor for success. You know, and it's funny, as you were talking about the mourning process, I think one of the things that a pastor could do is really praise the person who's going to take his place. You know, and I know that's hard. And, you know, maybe this is like a conversation we need to revisit with actually having a priest here who's
yeah,
gone through that transition. But I think, like, you know, I can't imagine how hard it is as a priest. You're this spiritual father over this community, and now you're asked to give up your spiritual family for a new one. And, you know, I can speak from experience as a youth minister, right? When I left my last church, I remember thinking, I don't want the next youth minister to walk in and all of a sudden have to live in my shadow. And I know that might sound arrogant of me and everything, but it was the reality. I'd been there for, you know, over a decade, you know, dozens of men and women, hundreds of teenagers who were loyal to my personality, loyal to me, you know, to my methodologies and everything like that. And so as I left, I made sure I talked to as many people as possible and said, you know, don't follow me to this next church, you know, unless you really feel called to that church, don't leave to follow me, leave, you know, because God's calling you there. And then secondly, whatever this next person does, celebrate him or her, you know, lift them up. And I've had the opportunity to sit down with my predecessor at my last church. And I said to him, I was like, if anyone comes to you and says, this is the way that Chris used to do it, just say like, well, Chris has given me permission to change it. And I was like, you don't need my permission to change it, but I want you to know that I have no problem if you do change it. And, you know, honestly, like I said those things and I want to mean them 100%, but when I heard about some of the changes, I was like, oh, that hurts. Like, why did they do that? You know, and it's hard. But then again, like I look at what he's doing right now and he's killing it in ministry. He's doing a really great job. And so, you know, that would be my advice to pastors is, you know, don't poison the well. Don't like build up loyalists who are going to sabotage. Cause I've seen that done by priests. I've seen that done by youth ministers and DREs, and it's ugly and it's really ugly and it can damage a church for a long time.
Yeah. I think that's really good. What you're talking about is humility, right? And putting our egos aside and realizing that what we do in ministry, even this podcast, Chris, this podcast that we do is not about you or me. It's not about our personalities, but it's about empowering and training and talking about, you know, things in ministry that is going to help other people. And so if I leave tomorrow or I die tomorrow, that this is still a tool that could be helpful, regardless of whether I'm here or not. Well,
Wait, I'm going to have to keep the podcast going if you die and everything like that.
Oh, we can talk about that.
Oh, man, I'm just all sad. John, you can't leave me. Like,
But I think that that is an important reality, and it's human nature. It's part of our original sin to really focus on ourselves and
right.
put our ego aside, right? And I go back to what Ken Blanchard and Phil Hodges talk about ego, how they describe ego, right? Mm-hmm. So ego can stand for three things. E-G-O, it could be edging God out, or E-G-O, exalting God only.
Mm.
For me, that's been an important check always in my life when I'm in transition, or even when I'm not in transition, when I'm just doing what I'm doing. It's like, is this about me or is this about God?
That's okay. Great. Yeah.
It's so easy for me to think, oh, this is all about me. It's all about me, right? You know, I got news for you. It's not, you know? Right. But that is the true test of humility, is that can we build up other leaders and build up the person who's going to be following us and lift them up so that they can succeed?
Right.
That's hard to do. And again, this is why I don't envy our priests, because that's a challenge. Now, they're prepared for that because that's what they signed up for. That's the reality. Talking about some of the transition in place, every diocese has a formal transition plan in place. And so obviously, you know, if you are part of the team that's sticking around at the parish and your pastor's leaving, well, follow that, find out what that plan is and follow that plan. Yeah. But as an individual contributor, start thinking about what are the things that you want the new pastor to know? And start capturing those thoughts right away. Have a little journal, have a little page on Evernote, wherever you want to capture that, and say, as the day goes on, right? Because you usually know a few months in advance of a transition, right? And start capturing that stuff. It's like, okay, I want them to know this. I want them to know this. And start creating the structure of a formal document that you can give the new pastor and say, this is what we're about. This is what we're currently doing. You know, these are the key people, et cetera. Whatever you want them to know, start articulating that so that he's prepared when he takes on that role and you're prepared to give him the information he needs to succeed and to get started.
Yeah. And even if you can't be available afterwards so that they can pick your brain. And that's the one thing about the current church that I'm at is the pastor who was there for a long time, he retired. And he's still around. And I know that my current pastor sometimes picks his brain and just be like, hey, how'd you deal with this? How'd you deal with that? And I mean, that's kind of like, you know, sort of an easier situation because you're replacing someone who retired and was not necessarily removed too. And I think we have to sort of state that sometimes there's other emotion that's tied with someone leaving. Like if you're retiring, there's plenty of time to prepare, right? There should be no excuse. There's plenty of time to prepare. But if someone is removed, yeah, you've got only a couple of months. I think setting up the document is a great idea. I think also, you know, us as lay staff have to like start having hard conversations with ourselves in regards to a new pastor is going to come in and, you know, not because he's a bad guy or, you know, a good guy or anything like that, but you might need to look at other places to work. You know, and it's just because if there's not a connection with leadership, then, you know, there's not a connection to leadership. It doesn't make you a bad person or a good person. It doesn't make him a bad person or a good person. But I think it's really important that you're on board with his vision. And if you're not, don't try to fight it there. Because again, you can really impact the community, but figure out the best way that you can support him. And if one of those things is looking at other jobs, which I know sounds so drastic, and it's a rare sort of occasion, but it needs to be a possibility of just saying like, I need to step out of the way because it's time for someone else to take this position.
Yeah, agreed. But that's something that happens long after the transition, right? And it's not long after per se, but you don't start making that decision prior.
Oh yeah, it's not July 2nd and you're like, I quit, here's my resignation. No, but
you got to give them time. And I think that's another best practice, the thought that we need to think about is give them time, right? You know, you don't learn about people in one day and how they lead or how they work or, you know, what keeps them up at night. I mean, that comes with time. And so you got to build that relationship And this is where I'm saying, this is you start prepping yourself and what are the things that you want them to know? And when they come on board, you know, really start building that relationship, you know, and the best way that I know as a lay leader that's on staff at the parish is you got to have regular one-on-ones with them, right? So when they come on board, make that part of the culture, you know, and institute that and say, I want to meet with you one-on-one. I promote weekly, you know, that's my bias. That may not be a reality for everybody, you know, but that's where relationships are built, right? You know, and so you got to take that time to get to know each other and get to know each other's style. You know, you can have some sort of view of what you heard about this individual as a pastor. And then they come and it's totally different, right? You know, it's the same idea of like, you know, just because somebody else had a bad experience of that pastor doesn't mean that you will have a bad experience of that pastor, right? Because you are a different person and they're in a new setting and they're going to think and work and act differently. Look, just we change, we adapt. When we're in new places, when we're dealing with new people, it's that's what makes us so great as human beings, is that we can change and adapt to different things. So don't take other people's word for what you heard about this pastor, you know, or don't quit on day two. Like, really take the time to invest in the relationship with your pastor, and make that a priority moving forward. To the point that even, you know, if it's appropriate, reach out beforehand, you know, not to me, but if you're in a gathering or something like that, say hi. It's like, oh, I'm John. I'm the business manager at XYZ Parish. I'm looking forward to having you come on board. Like,
right.
You know, welcome, right? And just something as simple as that can go a long way in making them, as the newbie on the block, the pastor, welcomed and feel supported. And I think that's important. I think we need to come with a lens of support and welcome to new pastor or new priest coming to the parish.
Yeah, and I think from the pastor's standpoint too, you know, don't go in and clear house and you know, give everyone a pink slip, but like take those next 2 years or a year to really just look at the staff and say, is this the team I need around me? And I don't be surprised if people leave. Just going back to my earlier points, people might leave, you know, because they're upset by the situation. Other people, again, it's just like, hey, you're a good guy, but this is just not, you know, we're just not going to be a great team. And, or this is not going to be a great match. And if they leave, wish them well, you know, thank them so much for the years of service that they did give. So don't be discouraged if people leave, because people often do leave during transitional times, even parishioners, and it's not you, it's just change is hard. You know, but at the same time, when you're coming in, start, putting in instituting systems and structures to help you evaluate whether or not you have the right staff on board. And so I like John's idea of like, you know, go out and grab coffee or a bite to eat with everyone, and try to do it on a regular basis for, you know, maybe the first couple of months, you know, just at least the first couple of months, just to build those relationships. And then somewhere along the line, you know, don't be afraid to establish some just kind of goal setting and review, system in place, you know, because you want to get to know their vision for their ministries. You want to get to know like what they're doing in their day-to-day jobs. And you want to make sure that they're living up to the expectations that you have and that the church has for them. And therefore, after a year or two, if it's really not working out, and you had maybe a gut feeling beforehand or whatnot, but it's really not working out, you're not then just letting them go because I'm the new pastor and I'm clearing house and you don't want that reputation, but you've methodically gone through it and you've talked to these people and maybe even so helped, the two of you have made that decision together. Also don't be afraid to reassign people, on your staff. You know, maybe you recognize that the DRE or the youth minister would make a great pastoral associate, or, the bookkeeper would make a great business manager. You know, don't be afraid to like look at those, different roles and just say like, hey, I know you've been doing this role for 10 years, but have you ever thought about stepping up into a higher leadership role? For sure. And what you're doing is you're making changes and tweaks that aren't so drastic. And even if they are drastic, there's a lot of thought process that goes behind it. And I think that's what people are going to look and maybe even criticize you on. When you make changes, they're going to look at like, okay, how much thought went behind this process?
Sure. Yeah, well, and it all starts with the relationship building, right? You know, get to know the community, build those relationships with the staff. But the old adage I think is true. It's like, don't make any major changes for a year, unless you absolutely have to, because if you're in a dire situation, then you have to make changes right away. So obviously I understand that, but because change is so hard, you know, for everybody, it's like, okay, maybe changes need to happen. You're not going to get a good sense of that in 10 days time or in 30 days time. And so giving that time to breathe and to sit with it and discover that is important. And then again, relationships. And so if you're the new pastor coming on board, honor the structure that you are inheriting, mm-hmm. but with the idea of knowing that you can change it and do what you want with it, you know, and that right. is your prerogative, and you should, you know, right. If necessary. And that's the whole Chris's point. But again, I just keep going back to all this stuff becomes easier if you're in relationship with people. And so if you're a pastor, immediately set up one-on-ones with all your key staff and even with key volunteers. Certainly with staff, especially the ones that report directly to you, you need to meet weekly with them. Yeah. And again, that's where it starts. And that's where you're going to find out what's working and what's not. You know, what are the strengths of your team? What are the weaknesses and challenges? And where are the growing edges? And also pray together in those processes as well. So,
yeah, there's a lot to talk about with the subject because we didn't even get into like how to help the parishioners transition. No, you know? Yeah. So for now, just ignore
that time. Yeah.
Yeah. Just ignore them. You know, they'll get over it.
Ignore parishioners. Yeah.
They'll complain about something, you know, regardless of how
eventually,
good
yeah.
Eventually.
That,
yeah.
That should be your mantra. It's like only talk to parishioners when they have something to complain to you about.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. There you go.
Kidding. Don't do that.
No. But I mean, what we can say in short with that is some of the same principles we talked about with staff, you know, definitely do that with the parishioners. And if you're a parishioner listening to this and you've got a leadership role and everything, you have every right to reach out to the staff and, you know, just to talk through with them. I mean, communication is important. Put your concerns out there at front, but then recognize the fact that change is inevitable and it's something you need to do. And instead of figuring out how you can fight it, think about how you can fuel it and how you can really enhance it. Because if that pastor walks into your church feeling like he's got to live under a huge shadow or prove himself to you all, like that is going to just be so hard. And he's never going to meet those expectations. But if he walks in and you guys celebrate him and welcome him and just show him like your gratitude that you have this pastor, this leader, this spiritual father, then I think he's going to approach it with a much more open mind. And he's going to have a greater time being able to really, you know, adjust to the change that he's going through as well.
Good
topic. I know we're out of time here, but if you guys have questions, shoot us a question at questions@thechurchpodcast.org. I know some of our listeners are priests. We'd love to hear your guys' feedback on that. Maybe share with us some of the top things that helped when you entered into your parish or some of the top things that were really challenging. Because as John and I have mentioned before, we're not the experts on all these subjects. You know, we're learning, we're growing. These conversations are just about some of the things that we're learning. And we want to also learn from you. So shoot those to questions@thechurchpodcast.org. You can also reach us out to us on social media. We're both on Twitter and Instagram, LinkedIn and Facebook. And you can find John on his website, johnrinaldo.com. And you can find me at marathonyouthministry.com. Anything else you want to add, John, before we sign off?
No, that's it. But I think we'll definitely do a future episode at some point talking about this a little bit further because there's so many places that we can delve into. But this is a good start.
Definitely. Definitely. All right. Well, we thank you all for listening. Don't be afraid to send us your questions or leave your reviews on iTunes. Share us with your friends, families, pets, anyone who might listen to a podcast. We just want to get the word out there. But thank you for all that you do. We love you and we'll see you next time. Take care.